There was a difference in owning a mistake as a follower and owning a mistake as a leader. And I think it's really taught me a lot.
Hey there, I'm Julie. Welcome to Uncomfy, a podcast about sticking with moments that challenge us. We share the stories of real people in moments that challenged their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down, they stuck with the discomfort. They stayed curious and open, and they're glad they did. We hope these stories inspire you to stick with it too, because there is so much to gain. New empathy, deeper relationships, and more clarity about our own views. I'm glad you're here. Now, let's get uncomfy. Here's a story about getting called out at work in a pretty tough way. I'm joined by Richard Kraft. He's a former healthcare leader, and he's host of a podcast called The Men of the House. Richard, welcome. Thanks so much for taking time today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, let's dive straight into your story. Then we'll circle back and talk a little bit about what you're doing with your podcast. What were you doing? This story happens a little early in your healthcare career. What was your role? Where were you? What kind of a position did you have?
So I was actually what they call a practice manager. So essentially what that was I had two ambulatory clinics, which are kind of like your family practice urgent care clinics that you go to when you're normally sick. And I had about 26 nurses and 10 physicians or clinicians. You know, I'd come from an ER background where I was not a leader. I was more of a doer. And so this was my first kind of leadership role. And prior to the emergency room, I'd worked in kitchens and I had been in the military. And with those, they're very hierarchical structure-wise, and they're very fast-paced environments, they're very chaotic environments, and typically when you have those kinds of environments, let's just say language, it can be rather harsh, brash, and we happen to lose our lead nurse, and that was kind of my go-to person to keep everything moving in the back. So once he left, I kind of had this real trial by fire where I was having to pick up whatever slack I could because I'm limited in what I could do because I'm not clinical. I don't hold a license. But needless to say, we went about 15 months without a lead nurse. And when you're working short-staffed for about 15 months, tensions can kind of rise to a heightened level. And at that time, we were actually getting a little bit of relief. We were getting an extra body in the form of a travel nurse, which was rare. We'd never had one before.
And this is sort of a short-term, temporary. There are
correct.
Medical professionals who kind of take short-term jobs and they travel around the country, hence the travel nurse.
Yeah, it's usually like a 90-day contract or something like that. And sometimes it's open for renewal. And one day I'm on the way out the door and I'm walking out the back door and past the nurse's station. And as I do, there's two nurses sitting there chatting. And you know, I can't remember how it came about or what initially was said, but essentially the two nurses kind of asked me, well, what would you do if we just walked off the job? And I immediately, without thinking, just said, well, I would replace you with travel nurses because we were in the process of getting travel nurses. And I really didn't think anything of it. No fuss was made or anything like that. Nothing was said. It was just kind of remark in passing. And I think it was probably several days later, maybe a week later, my director had called me into the office and proceeded to present me with a write-up for making an off-the-cuff remark.
Mm-hmm. So the nurses reported you. They were
correct.
I guess they were upset. They were maybe offended by this comment.
I want to say maybe they felt threatened, like their job felt threatened.
Oh,
but
like you
I had
were
a,
threatening them, like, don't you
yes.
walk off, I can always replace you. Okay.
But you know, from my point of view, I was like, well, you're threatening me to walk out on the job.
Yeah.
And so I really didn't think it was a threat. I just thought it was
hypothetical.
Really I thought it was more factual because,
okay.
you know, the reality of it is, do you think a $7 billion organization is going to come to a screeching halt because two nurses are upset? They're going to keep it going regardless of how that is. And so I kind of said it really more matter of factual. rather than offensive.
So in this moment, then, this is, I guess this is the precipitate, the stick with it moment we talk about, where, you know, it feels unpleasant. Something's uncomfortable. Look, nobody likes to get called out and to be written up officially and then have to, you know, get called into your boss's office. What do you recall about how you felt at the time, what your instinct was in that moment?
Betrayed. From a leadership perspective, you pour so much into your team. You feel like everything you do is for the team. And as hard as I was trying to solve this problem of getting us a lead nurse, getting us that extra body, that extra glue to hold things together, I just wasn't having any luck. And, you know, no matter how much I tried to explain that, you know, they knew, they were aware of all the interviews. It was a daily update, you know, so I initially felt betrayed that how could you feel like I'm necessarily going against you? But also I felt like, hey, you guys were the first ones to bring up the question. If you don't
you
like,
started
the,
it.
If you don't like the answer, then don't ask the question.
Yeah. So it was a little bit of defensiveness too, kind of like, all right, look, man, like this doesn't need to be, you know, did you want to fight the write-up, like sort of counter with it, or, you know, because this is the moment in which you have to decide, how am I going to proceed here? What's my next action going to be? What did you see as your options in that moment?
You know, I really didn't feel like I had too many options, to be honest with you. You know, I can remember when that write-over was slid to me to sign, and I was allowed to give my explanation of events. I don't know that I wrote anything, to be honest with you. When I think back of it, I don't think I tried to be defensive. I don't really think I tried to defend myself. It was really more of a, I want to say like a realization that regardless of how I felt about it, whether I felt I was in the wrong, they were in the wrong, as a leader, and I'd been listening to leadership podcasts and whatnot, mostly Jocko Willink's Extreme Ownership. And, you know, I think that was part of the reason I didn't necessarily write anything or attempt to defend myself, because coming from a military background or kitchens or the ER, it's really no excuse when they ask, hey, why did you fail? It's like, no excuse. I don't have an excuse for it. You take responsibility, but then you try to move on and move forward with a correction. Yes, initially I felt betrayed, but is explaining myself going to make the write-up not happen? Make it go away? What's it going to say about me? It just didn't feel right. The right thing to do felt to be like, look, you've already made this error with your mouth by talking. Don't make it again with your thoughts and writing. And so for a moment there, I had to actually ask myself, like, well, what's the big goal? What's the big picture? Is it to win this argument, this write-up, to keep this blemish off my record? Or is it to establish myself as the kind of leader I want to be and make this team kind of what I want it to be?
So what did that mean for you then in terms of the next step that you took?
Well, it meant trying to figure out. It took a little bit of time. And at that time, we were getting new leaders. So I was actually, I got written up by one director and turned around, I think, the next day and had a new director. And I asked that director what I should do. And he just said, look, you're probably going to have to overcorrect and go the opposite way if you want to make this right. And, you know, it was funny. I think I actually ignored that. Because I didn't feel like an overcorrection was the best thing. And, you know, going back, it was really kind of like a, you have to decide right then, like, okay, I'm going to be humble. I'm going to be truthful, real, authentic, transparent, genuine in how I'm going to repair this relationship with these nurses. Because even though it was two of them that kind of precipitated it, I'm sure all the nurses felt the weight of it if they felt like they could be replaced that easily. And so I really just had to kind of sit in the uncomfortableness, continue to do as I'd done in terms of expressing my genuine interest and concern for my team, you know, making my daily rounds. And that meant even asking the two, you know, that helped me get right up, you know, to express my genuine concern as a person, as a leader towards them. How's your family? Is there anything you need help with? Is there anything going on that would impact your job? It took time, but I think I was genuine enough and truthful and honest enough with the process that eventually they turned around. And we kind of understood that what had happened was, you know, we were all so frustrated with this being shorthanded for so long that it kind of prompted this, you know, I'm a problem solver. So it prompted this thoughts of, well, how can we solve this problem? And so what we did was, one of the people who actually precipitated the write-up, I said, okay, why don't we do this? We can't find a lead nurse. I'm doing a lot of it. Everybody's helping out. Everybody's chipping in. But why don't you take the lead nurse position and we'll just hire for a regular nurse, because it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to, we're going to have a lot more applicants and we'll get that extra body a lot sooner. And ultimately, that's what happened was we made her the lead nurse. We opened up that floor nurse position. We were able to hire for that. And we ended up getting the people. And then within time, that lead nurse who really didn't want to be the lead nurse, she found something else that was better for her and her schedule. And we kind of went on with this. You know, I had developed a rapport and trust with them and, you know, was later nominated to be a tier one leader. That means that surveys are sent to my team, my physicians and my nurses and whatnot, and they grade me on how I am as a leader. And tier one means it's kind of like SEAL Team 6 or Delta Force operators. They're tier
five stars,
one operators.
No yes. notes, right?
And so it was kind of it was a big deal. It means that they feel that I listen to them, that I think they're important, that I include them. And so that was kind of it was a big deal to go from being a leader who'd been written up for his words to turning it around and developing a team who would hold me in such high regard. Yeah. So,
Richard, well, congratulations on that. That's
thank you.
You know, and I really admire the humility and the hard work. And I'm just thinking about all of those conversations that you had to have where there was that initial sort of frustration and shame and whatever, you know, and
a lot of shame,
awkwardness related to sort of what they had, you know, said about you and what you had said. And just do you think that you would have gotten to the solution that helped you to sort of get over that hurdle and move into this next place, right? Because I mean, the inability to hire that lead nurse was sort of what it was really creating all of this tension and overwork and frustration. And the idea that you were able to mend that relationship with those two nurses in particular, and that actually opened the door to the solution that sort of helped you guys to move forward as a team. I guess I have to wonder if you would have gotten to that solution.
I don't think
so. If you hadn't treated the write-up the way that you did.
I don't think so. And I thought about it last night. And it's funny because as I progress in my journey as a human and as a podcaster, I've started to realize how much things had to go the way they did in order for me to arrive here with some of the skills that I've arrived with. And I don't think that I would have arrived at that solution because we hadn't arrived at that solution prior. And it was actually thinking about it that made me realize that it was that level of frustration that propelled their comment and propelled my comment right back. You know, it's like a couple of people arguing. We were just all at the wit's end. And, you know, outside of the write-up, you know, the write-up is just one piece, but that problem was still there, the problem that caused the whole write-up. And so I think without the write-up, I don't think we would have come to that set of solutions.
So did that experience or sort of what you've taken from that and developed over the years, is that influencing what you're doing today? And if so, in what way?
It's definitely helped me to realize how much time plays a factor in things, and that sometimes you just have to wait things out a little bit. You have to be uncomfortable. You have to be willing to sit through the discomfort and figure out the root cause and come up with solutions. And I think in another way that it really helped me, I think I was already pretty strong at owning up to mistakes just from my prior experience with the military and the emergency room. But I think it really, there was a difference in owning a mistake as a follower and owning a mistake as a leader. And I think it's really taught me a lot in terms of whether it's how I conduct myself on a podcast or even just in my family life, being a father and being a husband, I would say is probably the two most areas that it would be visible, whether it's taking the ownership, kind of swallowing your pride, swallowing your initial thoughts, and really coming forth with that attitude and that determination of, hey, I was wrong. Let's make this right. But it's not just words. It has to be about the actions, because it wasn't my words that made them nominate me as a tier one leader. It was my actions. And so I feel that, you know, it's kind of always been, it's carried through in a way that, hey, you make a mistake, own it, accept it, figure out how to make it better, make sure it's genuine, don't overcorrect, you know, don't be fake about it, because people can see right through that. And if you want to make real progress, both with yourself and the people maybe that you had an infraction with, you know, then that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to own it, be uncomfortable, and be genuine in that attempt to repair and move forward.
Yeah. So you've mentioned your podcast. It's called The Men of the House. What are you hoping to accomplish? Well, first of all, tell me about that name.
You know, anybody who knows me knows, especially on vacation or when I'm out of town, because we don't have a Waffle House. I love to go to the Waffle House alone. And you can only sit at a table if you have two or more people. So you're sitting at the counter or the bar, and I'm sitting next to other single men, single people who are there having their breakfast along with me. And we're all kind of sitting in silence, doing our own thing. And I sat there and I thought, well, we're at the Waffle House. Like, what's their story? What's my story? Like, we're all similar. And so I had thought of this concept, The Men of the House. And initially it was a blog. I considered making it into a book. And when I decided to podcast, I decided this would be the name of it.
So it's The Men of the Waffle House?
It's The Men of the House podcast, but
right,
It's kind of modeled
by the Waffle House.
Yes.
I love it. What's your Waffle House order? What is it that you love to eat there?
It's either a pecan waffle with bacon and hash browns, or it's a pork chop dinner with double hash browns, because I don't eat eggs.
Oh, all right. But I, pecan waffle, sign me up. I love the image that you just painted there of men sort of sitting in silence, but having a lot in common and maybe not always having the ability to sort of communicate or connect about those things.
Right. And that's kind of the point of the podcast, is that connection piece, is to show, hey, we're similar, we're not alone. Like, maybe there's this underlying level of commonality we all have as humans. And I think if we could embrace commonality and what we have alike, as opposed to fighting about what's different, that we could make the world a better place.
Yeah. And I love you layer on that, the mindset that you talked about of the humility and the willingness to stay uncomfortable and curious and, you know, try to be a better leader. It's like, mwah. I love it. That's really great. Yeah. Not easy. That's a really important point. Absolutely. It's something that I'm very mindful of when we have these conversations on Uncomfy, that like these are, you know, you bring this story to the table, and as you're talking about getting written up, I am like, my temperature is rising, my blood pressure is racing. Like,
and that was the first time I'd ever been written up.
Yeah. These are, you know, hard things. And that people come and tell their stories is just really humbling to me. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Kraft is the host of the Men of the House podcast. You can be sure to check that out on all the podcast platforms for candid discussions on fatherhood, self-care, mental health, and navigating life's chaos. He actually was generous enough to have me on his show a couple of months ago talking about how to engage with the news and how to have uncomfortable conversations more productively. So be sure to check that out. It's the Men of the House podcast. And thanks for getting uncomfy with us today. You know, Richard's story has me thinking about opportunities at my own job with my own coworkers where I could maybe seek out some potentially difficult feedback to be a better leader. And I'd love to hear about a stick with it moment you've had recently. What was the perspective or situation that challenged you? Why did you decide to stick with that discomfort rather than bail out or get defensive? And how did it go? Drop a line to uncomfy@byu.edu. And if you're looking to practice staying uncomfy in the face of challenging ideas, I'd love to have you check out my other podcast called Top of Mind. Each episode tackles one tough topic with the goal of helping us see things a little differently and feel new empathy. You can find Top of Mind on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. Uncomfy is a BYU radio podcast. Samuel Benson produces it, and the team includes Enrique Prado, James Hoops, Sam Payne, and Brandon Lewis. I'm Julie Rose. Can't wait to get uncomfy with you again next week.